Actually, that expression, holier than thou, is a Bible expression. Back in the book of Isaiah, the Bible mentions that, and interestingly enough, it is in connection with idolatry. Isaiah chapter 65, the prophet speaking for God describes some idolatrous practices, and he mentions that these are people who remain among the graves and lodge in the monuments, verse 4, and eat swine's flesh and broth of abominable things is in their vessels, which say, stand by thyself, come not near to me, for I am holier than thou. These are a smoke in my nose, a fire that burneth all the day. God was utterly disgusted with the idea that those in idolatry would think of themselves as very special and as holier than thou. But the passage I really want us to concentrate on tonight is found over in the 15th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, and is a very familiar story to you. And the setting for that story is found in verses 1 and 2 of Luke chapter 15, which says, there drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, this man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. There was no denying the charge. It was certainly true that Jesus did the very things of which he is here accused. Many people had seen Jesus do that. They realized that he freely mixes and mingles, and you can just hear the Pharisees talking among themselves and saying, well, he's a good man. He performs miracles. He helps a lot of people. And someone else would say, yes, but what about his influence? What about the people with whom he associates? Surely he knows that that marks him, because he freely associates with sinners. He even eats with them. In response to that, Jesus, in the 15th chapter of Luke, tells several little stories. One of them is about a man who had sheep, and one of them went astray. He tells about a woman who had 10 coins, and one of those was lost. And you all know those stories. But the biggest of the three stories is the story of two lost boys, which we know as the parable or the story of the prodigal son. In this story, beginning at verse 11, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his sustenance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father, and when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his face and fell on his neck and kissed him. And his son said unto him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his elder brother was in the field, and when he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked him what these things meant. And he said to him, thy brother is come. Thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It is meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. The prodigal and the elder brother represent two kinds of sinners. The prodigal's sins were gross and immoral, visible. There was no doubt. They were clearly labeled as sin by all kinds of upstanding people. And so his sins were pretty plain. The elder brother's sins, however, were sins of the spirit. They were subtle. They were inward. This was directed to the Pharisees, of course, who outwardly appeared to be very righteous, but they really were not. And I want us, as we study particularly the elder brother, to ask ourselves, is there some of that in me? Is there some Pharisee in me? Is there some of the holier than thou attitude in me? I believe there are four ways that we can find out answers to that question for ourselves. I hope that each of us will ponder these as we think about ourselves and the charge of Jesus against the Pharisees. The first of these is that you can measure your love for the Father by how much you love your brother. Now, it's very easy for us to think, well, I love the Lord. Who would question my love for God? Of course, I love the Lord. And then turn right around and think of this or that brother with disdain. John reasons about that in 1 John chapter 4 and verse 20 and says, if a man says, I love God and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For if we love not our brother whom, if he loves not his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And so we can measure our love for God by our love for the Father. Did this man really love his Father? Really? Did he really love his Father while despising his brother? It is very easy for us to practice self-deception. We cannot take our place as the Father's son unless we also recognize that we are our brother's brother. One equals the other. If we are the Father's son, then we are also our brother's brother. In the old rebel cafeteria in Athens, there was a large urn for coffee, held several gallons, I would guess. On the side of that was a little glass tube, and you could see the level of the coffee in the glass tube, and you would know how much was in the bigger urn. You can measure your love for God by looking at how much you love your brother. Do you claim to love God, and yet you hate your brother? We cannot have it both ways. You can measure your love for God by how much you love your brother in Christ. How does the Bible, as we look at this story, how does this elder brother react to the news that his brother has come home? Wouldn't it have been a wonderful story if he had said, thank the Lord, I am so thankful that my brother has come home. Bubba has learned his lesson. This is a day of rejoicing. Spread the word among the servants. Only very essential work to take care of the animals will be done today. Everything else is for feasting and congratulations. My brother has finally come to his senses. He has come home. Did he do that? No. No, he had a jealous and pharisaical attitude. He evidently, like many of the Pharisees, looked at the pleasures of sin in which others participated and was jealous of that. I heard of a brother in a Wednesday night prayer who said, "Thank you, Lord, for this small number of people who are gathered to worship you while all of the rest are out having a good time." Well, kind of betrayed himself there, didn't he? The Pharisee was jealous of the sins that others committed, and we cannot be right with God while wrong with our brother. Are you harboring a fever and anger and grudge toward a brother while you partake of the bread and the fruit of the vine and yet despising your brother? Be careful there. It is easy to have the Pharisaical spirit and to have a holier-than-thou attitude. The Lord gives us careful instructions on that. Or in the book of Matthew, for example, and this reflects the Old Testament worship that they were under at the time the Lord said these words. And he said, "If thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift." A second way that we can tell whether or not we have the spirit of the Pharisee in us is to recognize that our service is no substitute for fellowship with God. The elder brother was a model worker. I have no doubt the Lord does not question the statements that he made about his service. All of these years he had served his father faithfully. He had not consciously violated a single commandment of the Lord. And so he had a very good record. There would not be a lot of people, perhaps, who could say as much about themselves and their record as this elder brother did. And yet he had missed real fellowship with his father. He did not know his father's heart. I would guess that he would have thought, in the prosperity that they evidently enjoy, "This has been a good year. Crops are good. The servants are well fed. But I've noticed that my father has a sad look. And he looks down that road yonder. I don't suppose, surely not. Surely he is not longing for that rascal, my brother, and all that he's done." He didn't know. He did not realize his father's heart. Perhaps he was not spending enough time with his father. It is easy to serve in many ways and yet not know our father's heart. There are many who do not spend even 5 minutes in prayer to God every day. How can we know God if we do not talk to him? Would you be close to your children if you did not spend time with them, if you did not talk to them, if you were not in their presence? Do we know God? Do we take the time? Do you think that God is really excited about buildings and outward things only? Over in the book of Isaiah, chapter 1, verse 3, "The ox knoweth his father, the ass his master's crib, but Israel doth not know, my people do not consider." And so they did not know God. They were doing lots of things, but they did not really know God. When we know the Father's heart, then we know that he rejoices when the lost comes home. Many serve, but do not really appreciate a closeness and fellowship with God and what really pleases him. It is possible for us to serve for the wrong reasons. The TV evangelist who says it pays to serve God, give 10%, I can guarantee that you will prosper, particularly if your 10% is sent to me and to this program. there is a kind of a slot machine mentality. You put in the money and you pull the lever and you get the reward. It is not that way in our service to God. In 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 7, God loves a cheerful giver. The elder brother's service, the Pharisees' religion, was a kind of religion where they looked at what they were doing and what they had done and expected that reward. Many would say, well, I've done this and this and this, and where has it gotten me? Do people think any more of me because I have worked so hard and I have taught these classes and I have been diligent? Do people even notice? I'm not saying they should not notice and encourage, but that must not be our motive. That is like the Pharisee. A third way that we can ask ourselves a question is to determine if the Pharisee spirit is within us, is to ask whether or not our life is self-centered. A self-centered life will take away your joy. Was this elder brother happy? He was miserable. You read, and you don't have to read between the lines very much, but when you read that familiar story, you realize this man was not happy. He was not happy at all. He was filled with a sense of self. In verse 29, for example, he says, I and me and mine. It was all about himself. And looming large in his thought was himself and his service rather than the service to his Father. He was filled with self-righteousness, and there is no joy when you read there in these verses about him. Back earlier in this same chapter, Jesus talked about joy in the presence of God among the angels over one sinner that repenteth. And yet the elder brother found no joy in the fact that his brother had come home. You cannot have the Father's joy until you share the Father's burden. The Lord's burden is those who are lost in sin. And that needs to be sitting on the seat beside of me and in my heart. And I need to have day by day a concern for whomever I can help to come to understand, believe, and obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. That needs to be my burden. And that needs to be your burden. And when that is our burden, we share with the Father, then we can share in the Father's joy. I have been amazed through the years to see how sometimes the tiniest things can bring great joy to people. I remember particularly a lady at Hayes Mill, a congregation where I worked for a number of years, and we came to know and love a dear sister, and one of her sons was dying of cancer, and she was sitting with him every day. And one Wednesday night, I said, Sister Boyd, how is Dennis today? And she said, today's been a wonderful day. She said, I was sitting there and talking to him, and she said a little smile went across his face, and it seemed like a peaceful look followed that, and she said, it made me so happy. And I thought to myself, here I am concerned about all kinds of things, and that tiny smile meant so much to her. And the tiniest inclination that one will hear and believe and obey the Lord and walk after His will ought to fill us with joy. When we are self-centered, then we have the spirit of the Pharisees. In Psalms 126 and verse 6, he that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. There is great joy when we share the Father's burden for the lost. Could this be one of our greatest needs that we come to have day by day an abiding concern for lost people among our family, our friends, our co-workers? and that we are diligently praying that God will open doors of opportunity and that He will strengthen us for the task before us and help us to find just that opening and just those words to say to start the process. Do we have that desire and passion for lost souls? Do we only sing the words, bring them in, bring them in, bring them in from the fields of sin? Or is that truly our earnest desire? It may be that we do not have that burden for the lost because we do not yet share and know the Father's heart. Sometimes people are so busy and so caught up in the rush of life that there seems to be little time for that concern to be expressed. And then when you think about the Pharisees, they did not really have a great interest in people who were unlike themselves. The Pharisee and the Pharisee spirit in our generation is a little uncomfortable with evangelism, particularly if it is evangelism among those who are very different than we. We are most comfortable when converts come from our own social class, when they are much like us. But if a person is very poor, or if their background is very poor, if they have done terrible things in their lives, if they are of a different culture or race, or if perhaps their standards of personal hygiene are not ours, if they are very different, are we still interested in them? Do we still know that truly the gospel is for all? The Pharisee spirit causes an individual not to be interested in people like that. What the prodigal had done was so different in lifestyle from that which the elder brother had done, that the elder brother has little use for him or little interest in his repentance. Suppose the elder brother had met his younger brother that day. Suppose he had taken that road and a few miles from home had met his younger brother. I would guess the interchange between them would not have been pleasant. And I would guess that he would have made, the prodigal would have made a U-turn and gone in the other direction. How about us? Is our attitude such that we would bring people to Christ rather than repel them? The fourth way that you can tell whether or not you have the spirit of the Pharisees and a holier-than-thou attitude is to realize that some men's sins are open beforehand and others are more easily hidden. You know that. I know that. And when you read this parable, you realize that here are two sinners, two kinds of sinners. Whom do you consider the worst sinner, the elder brother or the prodigal? Well, the Bible really doesn't say all men need the Lord, and the elder brother needed the Lord. The prodigal certainly did. And so the Bible really does not tell us. The Pharisee in heart, though, is very difficult to detect and to give up. Which would you consider the greater sinner? The individual who cheats his employees, or the individual who does not give as God has prospered? One robs man of that which he should justly get. The other one robs God. Which is the worst sinner? We all have hearts of sin, but some sins are more open. Some are not as apparent, on the other hand, as other sins. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 24, some men's sins are open beforehand, going before unto judgment, and some men they follow after. You can easily hide heart sins. You can easily hide the spirit of the Pharisee. You can go with Bible in hand, and you can be a person of refinement, and yet have a heart that is the heart of the Pharisee. In the book of Romans, Paul gives a treatise on sin in the first three chapters. In chapter 1, he addresses the sins of the Gentiles. These are gross, they are moral, they are a catalog of carnality, they are terrible lists of awful things that the Gentiles were guilty of. But then he turns in chapter 2 to the sins of the Jews, and these were more inner sins, heart sins. And the conclusion in chapter 3 is that one is as bad as the other, that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. It is easy for us to look and think all of those terrible sinners out there, and that may be ever so true in the world in which we live. And yet, what about us? Are we really good? Do we have within us that spirit that is against the will of God? Is there some Pharisee in me? I read about a Sunday school teacher who was teaching a class of little children. She told them the story of the publican and the Pharisee. You all remember that story of how they went down to the temple to pray and so on. And she concluded that story by smiling at her class and saying, children, aren't we so glad that we are not like that mean old Pharisee? Well, she missed it somewhere, didn't she? And so tonight, I'm talking not to the person next to you, but I'm talking to you and to me. We all need to clean up our act and look in our hearts and ask ourselves, do I have the spirit of the Pharisees? I want to try an experiment with you tonight as we close. I want you to go in your imagination with me 30, 35 years from the time Jesus uttered these words to a prison in Rome where Paul with his old friend Luke are talking, and earlier, just a few days earlier, Paul has written his last letter to his young protege Timothy. And in that letter, he mentions, only Luke is with me. He mentioned several names, and they were in various places and had gone here and there. One had deserted him. But only Luke was with him. And he tells Timothy in this urgent writing that he believes the end is very near. The time of my departure is near. I've fought a good fight. I've finished the course. I've kept the faith. And so he is approaching the end with a great deal of confidence. And he says to his friend Luke, who has penned his gospel by this time and the companion volume to that, the book of Acts, what a wonderful thing that God has inspired him to write those, and what a blessing it will be to all the world for all time for those books to be in existence. And he says to Luke, I'm especially pleased that you included those stories that by inspiration have been revealed to you, and that as you set forth the careful record of the things that Jesus began to do and to teach, that you included that story about those two boys. And Paul says to Luke, I kind of see myself in that story. I was like that elder brother, very much like that elder brother. But some things happened in my life, and I came to see that I was like that prodigal, and that I came to the Lord, and in my hand no price I could bring. I had to say to him, you are the potter, I am the clay. Make me, mold me, make me according to your will. And he says what the Lord did in my life causes me every day to be amazed that he could love me so much that the course and direction of my life has been so changed, and that unto me who am less than the least of all saints was the grace given that I might preach to the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ. And while I was the chief of sinners, it is as if God picked me to be an example, a pattern, so that everywhere I have gone and preached the gospel, I could say to people, If God saved me, He can save you. Look what He has done in my life. And I am so glad, Luke, that you have written that account in what we know, of course, as the book of Acts. And so, as he wrote a few days earlier to Timothy, he said, "Come shortly to me. The time is near, I'm sure. If you can, bring John Mark with you. He's helpful to me. Bring that cloak that I left back there in Troas. This prison is cold and damp, and I could use it. Bring the books and the parchments. They will mean a lot to me." And so he and Luke talk and express their love for one another. Luke has been with him many years and has chronicled the things they have done together. And so in the book of Acts, we have that record. And so these old friends part. And the next day, Luke comes back and Paul is not there. So what a wonderful thing to have the book of Luke and to have the book of Acts and to have the account of one who, though he was like the elder brother, came to realize that he had nothing to offer save to humble himself before God. And it was then, just as in the case of the prodigal, that he became the material out of which God would make a kingdom. And that is what he wants us to do. And that is to yield ourselves absolutely and completely to him and say, "Take me, Lord, and use me in whatever way that you will. I am yielding to your will." It may be that tonight there is a soul who is tired of sin and the pig pens that accompany sin, and you are willing to accept the mercy and grace of a loving father who ran to meet the prodigal, who went out and treated the elder brother, and who would love for you to come to him. If that's your need and you're willing to come in simple, trusting faith, turning and repentant from sin, willing to confess Christ and to be baptized for the remission of sins, then we are here to encourage you in that. And if, as a child of God, perhaps you have been touched by the spirit of the Pharisee and you want to clean up your act and get your heart right with God and serve Him humbly and faithfully from now on, and if we can help you by praying with you and for you, we'd love to do that and encourage you as we stand and sing.